Welcome to the Let's Talk Energy podcast from EnergyNet. This series was recorded at the Africa Energy Forum 2023 in Nairobi, Kenya. Join us for this and other episodes as we talk to the industry players, stakeholders, and rising stars of Africa's energy sector.
We have been having incredible conversations with different people, different brilliant minds from the energy sector. And this is yet another conversation that is good and brilliant. And we are really excited to be talking to a young lady that's doing amazing work for refugees. Her work is incredible. And I really cannot wait to hear her journey, her story. And I cannot wait for her to share with you what she has done so far. So, Darlene, hi.
Hi,
how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Please do introduce yourself. Tell us what you do before we get into the questions.
Okay, my name is Darlene Ramiro. Mm-hmm. I'm 24 years old. I lead an organization that works with refugees, all refugees in Kakuma Refugee Camp, that is in Turkana, Kenya. And the organization focuses on digital education for the youth and members of the community. So we implement digital projects and education in the community. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we also do green education for members of the community.
Mm, yeah. Fantastic.
Thank you.
Today is World Refugees Day, right? Yes. So this is such a perfect day to record this, talking about what you're doing for the refugees. Let's talk about how you got here, because, okay, I mean, there is a backstory to what you do right now. Mm-hmm. How did you get here? Who was Darlene, first of all, before the work she's doing right now? And how has that led you to what you're doing right now?
Okay. Before Darlene got here, Darlene was a journalism student, mm-hmm, at the University of Masinde Muliro. Mm-hmm. And technology.
Okay.
So I believe I can say my journey started way before I started campus, because number one, I'm a refugee myself.
Oh, you are?
Yes, a Rwandese, okay, refugee living here in Kenya for the last 20 years plus.
Hmm.
Yeah. So my parents first came into the country because of the war that happened in Rwanda.
Yeah.
And I was bored, of course. Yeah. First, we were urban refugees. So we were living in Eldoret.
Okay.
And then when the post-election violence stuck in Kenya, we had to move to the camp. That was in 2007. So studying in the camp, I've studied in the camp. Mm-hmm. I've been able to finish my high school. I got a scholarship to go study in the university. But then in the middle, I went back after finishing school. I've been a teacher, so I was teaching, yeah, at a primary school where I used to study. Mm-hmm. I was teaching English. Then in between school holidays, you know, the long school holidays, I would come in the camp, do something just to keep myself busy. And then when I finished now campus, I was like, so what am I going to do? Of course, I applied work like all the other young people,
yeah,
gone for interviews, but then it wasn't really enough for me. Mm-hmm. I felt like I need to go back and do more work in the camp because I've been assisted to be where I am today. So I joined an organization. So while I was leaving to go to uni, I had a friend of mine who was thinking of founding an organization that helps refugees. So when I left, the idea was still, you know, at a small stage. But then, yeah, when I came back to the camp, he had an organization and they were looking for an operations manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm done with school. Why don't I just come and see what I can do?
Yeah.
So it first started off as teaching digital skills to young women. Would balance both the training parts, mm-hmm, and of course the management part of the hub.
Okay.
So with it, I got to learn engaging with the women, teaching them like basic computer skills.
Yeah.
And then we have computer programming for anyone who's interested. And then, of course, we have now the digital part, which focuses more on online work for the young women and mothers. So basically, I just run a digital hub.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the camp.
Okay.
Yeah.
So from Rwanda to Eldoret, back to Kakuma. That's a journey. There's a big story out there. And I love that you went back to Kakuma to teach people about digital skills, which we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. Mm-hmm. But how has that been? Because I can imagine from Rwanda, that was conflict that got you out of Rwanda.
Yes.
To Eldoret, conflict got you out of Eldoret. How has that impacted your view as a young person?
For me, it's not been easy. Mm. There are times it gets very emotional.
Yeah.
You ask yourself so many reasons. Why has this happened to me? But I've come to realize that everyone has their own path. And you don't give up. I've not gone through all that just to come and give up right now. And seeing the need. You know, when I was teaching in primary, I could see there are people who wanted to become like me. And I was just a teacher. I hadn't gone to any university teaching school mm-hmm. to become a teacher. I was just using my knowledge. So that inspires me to do better. And specifically now in the digital aspect where refugees don't really have a lot of knowledge mm-hmm. in. Yeah.
Yeah. Listening to you, your journey is a journey of resilience and strength. And look at you. Look at where you are right now. I mean, she was awarded today morning by the president. I mean,
yeah,
that's amazing. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the digital skills that you are teaching refugees. Could you expound more on that? What exactly are these digital skills that you're teaching these refugees? Why is it important to teach them these digital skills?
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll start off with the basics. Yeah. We do basic computer because we have so many refugees coming from different countries mm-hmm. and some of them do not know how to use a computer. Mm-hmm. Like you can go to a normal school, a national school in Kenya and ask a young student maybe in Form 1 to like type in Word and they're able to do it. Mm-hmm. But then you'll find a grown-up man does not know a mouse, a keyboard. And this is something that is evolving. Okay.
Yes.
So we start off first with the basic computer skills, which takes a period of 6 months, mm-hmm. depending on the package that you choose. And then from there, you're given a certificate, once you've gone through the whole course.
Yeah.
And then if you would like, we have also computer programming, which we work with, another organization to just support us, with that. Of course, computer programming, not everyone, you know, it's hard.
It is
very hard. So we have few students and mm-hmm. most of them are usually men. And once they get that skill, like mm-hmm. they feel like they can do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then lastly, we then have the digital skills. It's called digital marketing, but majorly I just call it online work.
Uh-huh.
So we implement a program called the LEAP program. It only targets women and girls who dropped out of school mm-hmm. or have not been able to advance.
Mm-hmm.
And it focuses on teaching them the basic digital skills. So we're talking about content creation using Canva. We're talking about data entry.
Yes.
We're talking about transcription with the use of a tool that helps them to just transcribe without having a lot of English knowledge.
Okay.
So basic things. Of course, there's also a refresher course on computer that we take them through. And then in the end, once they're done with learning the basics, we have a platform. It's called RemoTask. I'm sure many of the youth who are into the online gigs know what I'm talking about, RemoTask.
Yeah.
So in RemoTask, they're able to get different trainings mm-hmm. and bid for work. And then they get work.
Okay.
So what they do is they annotate data for the AI. Because we all know there's a lot of AI right now in the digital world.
Mm.
So what they do is, if this, for example, is a pen, there's a specific section.
Uh-huh.
It says you to annotate the color.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it big? Simple things that they can relate to. Of course, when they're starting out, It's hard.
It is.
But the moment they make even 50 shillings or 1,000 shillings,
yeah,
they're very happy.
Mm.
And it really changes their lives. So it takes, of course, consistency from them to keep on coming. And of course, not wanting to give up. But the moment they earn, they always want to come back and do more.
Yeah.
So that is a specific component that focuses on women. And of course, we try to create livelihoods. You can't just give someone a skill and leave them there.
Yes.
Like, you have to make sure that you've given them enough skills so that they can be able to do their own things. Mm-hmm. They can open cyber cafes. They can go and be ICT teachers in the primary schools. So that's how we work.
I mean, you're doing amazing.
Thank you.
That work is brilliant.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that you're not just giving them skills for nothing. They're able to go out there and use those skills to build their lives. And so then they'll have a resource. They'll have something to feed on.
Yeah. Right?
Thank you so much for sharing that.
Okay.
You're a superwoman yourself. And you're keen to supporting women.
Mm-hmm.
You've talked about women and giving them skills. And I just want to hear why. Why is that passion towards women?
Okay, why women? Of course, I'm a woman.
Yeah, superwoman.
A young one. And for me, I was given support to get yes. where I am. If I didn't have a good foundation, if I didn't have people believing in me, people paying my school fees, the small things, I wouldn't be where I am today. So I look at a young girl in the refugee camp who has a lot of challenges in the camp. And how can they be able to just do something small that they will be able to benefit, even if maybe they're not earning, but a skill that will take them to another job, for example. We've had beneficiaries that have gone through the program and have benefited in getting employment elsewhere, not in the digital aspect. And it makes me happy because I'm able to change that person's life. And women really face a lot of challenges in the camp.
Yeah.
We have early pregnancies. We have forced marriages, and then we have, you know, financial problems. You find in a family, they call them size 4, or depending on how many you are in the family, you're called as per size.
Mm.
So let's say, like, you come from a family of size 6, and you're the only girl. You have to take care of the family.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you have to learn. The education system it's not the best.
Mm.
But you want to maneuver between those things. And then there are, you know, there's no money at home. There's no money to buy sanitary pads. There's no money to get yourself the latest clothes,
yeah.
you know. So they really face a lot of challenges. And that's why the focus is more on women.
On women. I can imagine the challenges in the camp. Challenges you have faced as a young lady having grown up in the camp. So, yeah, great job supporting women and giving them digital skills. So, I want us to talk about the camp a little bit more. I know you're giving them digital skills for them to, you know, have some sort of livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
But are there any other jobs in the camp, or how exactly do people sustain themselves? Women, you know, how exactly do they sustain themselves apart from what you're doing?
Okay, so in the camp... This might create a lot of controversy, but when you live in the refugee camp, there's a certain limit of money you can earn.
Okay.
We have different organizations that work with refugees, but let me just say it's restricting the amount of money they can earn, because of course, you know, we have policies, they're governed by so many things. So you can find someone maybe has a job as an interpreter at the UNHCR. They get that to sustain their family. Others have local businesses, you know, others have salons. So majorly if the agencies, they offer employment. At the same time, there's also self-employment.
Yes.
And also, we've had changes in the refugee context where there's the new Refugee Act 2021, which of course is still in paper right now, but maybe I'm hopeful that in the next 5 years, things are going to change in that policy, because it talks about refugees not being limited to just staying in the camp, but moving, you know, living in other areas and integrating with the host, so with the Kenyans, such that they're just able to live like normal people. Mm. So those are just like future aspirations that we hope to see. Yeah, so that's the only labor that's there. And of course, people who are able to now work online, you know, online work is not restricting.
Yes, if you have power
and internet and you have the time, you can work and work and work. But then those other forms are restricting, you know. Mm. And then we have, of course, the issues of documentation. Like for me to come and work, maybe outside of the camp, I need to have a specific work permit for me to work, which of course they're just small changes that are going by so that these things can be done. Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting and amazing to learn. I don't know if you've heard of, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name well. I think he's Nial Deng. Nial.
Yes.
And he's done amazing work like you're doing right now.
Yes.
Such brilliant voices rising to speak about the rights of refugees, the needs of refugees. I mean, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Two things you mentioned, energy and power. We are at the Youth Energy Summit. And I just want you to briefly talk about how energy and power has affected your work at the refugee camp. Because I believe it's, you know, the previous speaker talked about energy poverty.
Yeah.
How low and middle income countries are suffering from energy poverty. So I want you to talk about that. How has it impacted your work at the camp? Would you like to see it better? Is it better? Is it bad? Yeah, just go ahead.
Okay. I can start off maybe when the first time we got into the camp, the electricity that was being used was generated by generators.
Uh-huh.
That was back in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now the hub that we run is run on solar energy, like clean solar energy. So we are basically off the grid. Yeah. And I can say energy has come in to do more, and it can still do more in the camp because most homes now are now leaving generator energy and getting their own solars, you know, in the house just for household. We have businesses that have invested in solar and are using solar energy. Organizations are now investing in having their offices equipped with solar because it's very efficient.
Yes.
And for me, I can even say at the hub, yes, we have solar energy.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, at our home, we also use solar energy.
Oh, amazing.
So it's good, and it's coming to change because I'm thinking of people having solar charging pods to just charge their phone rather than going to pay money to have their phones charged.
Oh, so they do go to pay money to have their phones charged.
So there's no electricity. The electricity is there, but it's only limited to specific areas.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so it's not really fully into the refugee camps.
Mm.
And maybe one of my takeaway would be we have so many investors here.
Yes.
And it would be an area willing to just digest into. And also in terms of knowledge and expertise, of course, we've had different organizations trying to have TVET classes on solar and maintenance, you know, just to have some skills going around.
Okay.
So it would be very nice to have such more focused in the refugee camp.
Okay.
Because there are a lot of creativity and innovative people, and they have many ideas.
Yes.
They just lack how to better formulate them and where to address them so that they can get the assistance that they need.
Yeah, and that speaks to the importance of having energy, and not just any other energy, renewable energy. You guys are using solar.
Yeah.
That's impressive. That's where we want to be, to move away from electricity that's, you know, powered this other way by but move to solar. So great work.
Thank you.
Keep doing the great work that you're doing.
Okay.
You are a young leader.
Yes.
A beautiful young leader. Taking over, I mean, the work you have done is fantastic. And I think, you know, the very first guest that we had, I had in the morning, I kept saying, I'm going to blow my own trumpet because no one will blow it for me.
For you.
So you need to blow your own trumpet. Yeah. And I just want to talk about your leadership and a bit of young people and leadership. What are your views as regards young people and leadership? Should young people hold positions of leadership? And what has your experience been as a young person in a leadership position?
Definitely, yes. Young people should go for the leadership positions.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because they have so much to offer.
They do.
And, you know, we are creative people. We are mm-hmm. always having innovations. We have a lot of energy within us. So leading our specific people is, first of all, it's an experience. It's a learning experience.
It is.
And then, of course, it's an opportunity for you to grow mm. as a person. And also to just hear what other leaders also talk about. Because you can't be a leader and expect, you know, to meet other leaders without you being a leader.
Yes.
Are you getting? Mm. So it's really, for me, it's I've been learning a lot. I didn't know that one day I'm going to wake up and be a leader. It took process and hard work. And of course, there are those days I'm like, oh, I'm tired. I want to give up. But I remember what I'm doing. Because if I give up, it's not going to only affect me. It's going to affect the beneficiaries, the people we serve.
Yes.
It's going to affect a lot of people.
Mm.
So I just think about them. Because if I know if I continue,
yeah,
then I wouldn't also have to leave them behind. So it's a good way to just give back to the community. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, so you can, if anyone has an opportunity to be a leader, please take it. I would just advise people to be good leaders. Don't let the power get into your head.
Mm.
And always be humble and listen to everyone, regardless of what they want to say. Because sometimes I've been at conferences and we have people talking a lot.
Yeah.
And you know, your patience can really be very small. So it really requires you to be very patient and have an open mind. And always encourage people to just, even if maybe what they're saying is not correct, but encourage them to
okay.
just speak out.
Mm.
So, yeah. And my experience as a young leader, a female young leader.
Yes.
In the refugee camp. It's had its ups and downs. Of course, there are rooms that I've walked in and people are like, what is this young person telling me? Like, who does she think she is? And then, you know, we live or we deal with different communities. So
mm-hmm.
I'm talking about different people from East Africa. And then we have communities that the woman is not supposed to lead.
Yes.
Yeah, I would not specify, but they are communities. So when you're addressing these people, because we do a lot of community outreaches, you can get any negative comment
mm-hmm.
and you wouldn't try to show it, or you just take it as it is because there's nothing you can do, and just continue being persistent because the community perspectives can change towards women who are in leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really been a learning experience. Of course, I have men who I lead who are older than me.
Yeah.
And sometimes we brush shoulders.
Mm, how is that? How do you manage?
You just take a breather
mm.
and then remember what the objectives are and what
yeah.
you're supposed to do. You need to work together. Then you go back. You talk about it if you're having problems and just share each other out, you know, expressing yourself. And then you solve it. It's just normal to brush each other's shoulders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Dalian.
Thank you.
You know what I think?
Yes.
I think you should write a book.
I should write a book?
I think you should write a book.
Okay.
Because I think the fact that you have moved from, you have a journey from Rwanda to Eldoret to Kakuma. You went back to Kakuma to teach. You went back to Kakuma to give back. And now you're sharing your leadership journey as a young leader. I think you should write a book. I'd buy it.
Well, I am a
Many
journalist.
People would buy.
So
yeah, you should write a book.
I
you
will
have,
write a book.
Mm, you have such a story that I think should be heard by a lot of people. So I'm going to ask you two more questions.
Okay.
One, what keeps you going?
Okay.
And two, if there's one thing you'd change in the camp, if there's anybody, an investor, somebody is going to be listening to us today, okay. If there's one thing you'd change in the camp, what would you want them to hear?
Change.
Yeah.
Okay, what keeps me going? Number one is my family.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. They're like my biggest motivators in this life. And doing better will make them proud.
Yeah.
Giving them a better life will make them happy. So that's my number one drive. And then the other thing is when I see something that I have done, the good it's giving out. For example, I was a teacher. So someone can try and calculate, okay, you were a teacher at what age? I was very young at that time. I think I was around 18, 19.
Really?
Yeah. So I had students who were older than me because, you know, in the camp we have people who go to learn when they're older, others are younger. So I meet one of my former students at a hotel. Mm-hmm. She's a waiter. And she's like, hi, Madame Darlene, it's good to see you. And I'm like, wow, it's good to see you too. What are you doing? I'm a waiter. You know, okay, so how is it? It's good. At least I'm making something.
Yeah.
You know, she finished school. Mm-hmm. She didn't drop out. You know, that's very, very good. Yeah, and she's working.
Mm.
And then I find another one. She's going to go abroad for her studies.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then I'm here. I'm like, okay, so when are you going? And, you know, those are the positive things that really keep me going. And I'm always very happy when I see the lives that I've touched do great things. And I believe it's a cycle. When you help one person, the other person helps the other person.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's it.
Yeah. Back to the other question.
Yes. The change I would like to see. For me, opportunities for the refugees.
Opportunities.
Yes. Because... Okay. Number one, not many people understand the refugee context.
Yeah.
I'm sure the people who are going to hear this for the first time today on this podcast, they'll be like, oh, okay. It's not their fault, but they didn't know. So if we could have more opportunities for refugees in different areas, in different, according to different skill sets, it would really help a lot of people. Cause I feel like there's just a lot of skills waiting to be tapped into in that area. And I would really ask anyone, when someone tells you they're a refugee, it doesn't mean that's the end of the world. Because most of the time you tell someone you're a refugee, they look at you in a specific specific angle. They think, you know, you have a lot of problems. Maybe you're not well-dressed. You're not well-educated. You know, you live in tents. So it's always good to just stop the stereotyping and be ready to just listen to them and see how you can help them. So if someone is listening and could be able to give me an opportunity or give my organization an opportunity or give any refugee they come across an opportunity, it would be really good.
Okay. Guys, you heard her. One, we need to stop stereotyping the refugees.
Yes.
I think you guys have great potential. I mean, some of you guys are smarter than even us.
That's not true.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. I mean, the work that you guys do, I've listened and I've seen some stories that have come out of the refugee camp. And some of these guys are brilliant. It's just that they are not given the opportunities that they deserve. So I think, yes, that's an important point. Opportunities are key. They're important. You have potential and you need to be seen as the amazing and brilliant minds that you are.
Yeah. And also maybe just to add on, I know this is maybe a bit of law related or politically related, but we have certain policies that make living as a refugee, maybe in Kenya, very difficult. So if they could be removed or lessened in a way. For example, I can say refugees in Uganda have more liberty than refugees in Kenya. So, and they have more opportunities and they have many organizations that are helping people.
Yeah.
So if the same could also be seen here in Kenya.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that should change. There are so many roadblocks in terms of policy and in terms of the law that are present, and they're really, really stopping a lot of refugees from becoming their best selves and just accessing what they need to access.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we need to work on that. We need to work on that.
Yes, we need to.
This has been such an amazing conversation.
Thank you.
And I'm really honest, it has been a good one. I have loved your journey. I have loved that you are resilient. I've loved the fact that you have risen up as a young leader, despite the challenges that you may have faced as a refugee. And you are inspiring thousands of people, thousands that will watch today, and thousands that may not watch, but they have known and have seen your work. So keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Any word of advice? How can people reach you?
I'm Deline Ramiro on almost all social media platforms.
If there are investors out there that would want to reach out to Deline, if there are people that would want to contribute to the work that she is doing at the refugee camp, this is the time to reach out to them. Guys, I hope you reach out to her. I mean, you've heard from her how brilliant and amazing she is and the work that she's doing at the camp. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Grace. Thank you for having me.
You are welcome.
And of course, I'd really like to thank the sponsors of the event.
Yeah.
For ensuring that I'm here, and everyone that's really played a role in ensuring that we're all here. So thank you, everyone. And I look forward to seeing you all again very soon. And thank you, Grace.
You're welcome. Yeah. You're welcome. Thank you, guys. Thank you for staying with us through the show. And we shall see you in the next episode.
This series was recorded at the Africa Energy Forum 2023 in Nairobi, Kenya. Join us for this and other episodes as we talk to the industry players, stakeholders, and rising stars of Africa's energy sector.